Blog Talk Radio.
Cannot play with them. Cannot win with them. Cannot coach with them. Can't do it. I want winners.
A new record, Michael Strahan. 22 and a half sacks. Breaks the block held by Mark Gatto.
Just put your name on it. That's all I say. Be a man or a woman. Put your name on it.
Santonio with a touchdown. Santonio Holmes. I don't know how he did it.
I'm raising the ante. Anybody wants in, get in. Anybody wants out, get out.
Devin Hester, you are ridiculous.
That's got to be one of those top 10 plays on SportsCenter YouTube.
Stay calm. Let's keep our composure.
A lot of time and patience.
Good Skinner stuff. You're never too old for Skinner.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of H4TV. I am your host, Jesse Mayfield-Chune. I am once again joined by my co-host, Xander Manning. We are a little bit later in the week, a little bit earlier in the day, just to confuse everybody, I guess. You know, certainly a bit of a different time. Yeah, I got to mix things up once in a while. And, of course, a lot of stuff going on here at H4. You know, it's been a very exciting couple of weeks, you know. Got some very exciting news. We got our first press credentials as a group, as a media outlet. We got press credentials to cover a game by the Nashville Predators. So we're moving up in the world. And, of course, that makes things just crazy around here. And we got to move our shows around, of course. But, you know, we're moving up, and that's exciting. So hopefully we'll be able to bring you some better content moving forward. But on that note, we are focused on Boston sports ourselves, so we're going to stick with that. And on that note, our first topic is the Boston Bruins. The NHL trade deadline came and went this past week. Boston Bruins perhaps didn't make as much noise as people were maybe hoping for. They did make a few small deals. The headlines included a trade of 2 second-round draft picks for Brett Connolly from the Tampa Bay Lightning and the exchange of Jordan Caron for the Colorado Avalanche's Max Talbot. So, Xander, I'm going to ask you this. What do you think of these moves? Should the Bruins have done more? Did they do just enough? What do you think of what they got out of this trade deadline?
Well, Jesse, this is a typical Bruins trade deadline. Bunch of hype. Bunch of build-up, nothing. Peter Shirley has done it for years, and he did it again. I like the idea with the Connolly trade, getting a winger. They've needed a winger all season. They finally filled that void. I thought it was going to be Cam Atkinson, Eric Cole, Curtis Glencross, one of those guys, but they all left by about 12 in the afternoon. I was like, well, crap, the Bruins aren't getting him. But I don't understand Shirley's logic in trading draft picks. I mean, you don't have a good farm system, so why are you trading your draft picks? You need to build that farm system up. Come on. And then as for the Max Talbot trade, of course, Jesse, you know how I feel about getting rid of Jordan Caron. It's basically a party in Boston. But because let's be real, he was not a very good player. But I'd say this is a good trade, but I'm in the process of writing an article right now for the Sports Journal right now, but unless you're getting the 2009 Max Talbot that won the Cup for the Pittsburgh Penguins or the 2011 Max Talbot that helped the Flyers make the playoffs, then I do not see why you're going after Talbot as opposed to someone like Eric Cole. Also, he's a centerman. You don't need another centerman right now.
It's true. The Bruins certainly do have an abundance of center guys. They, like what you said, what they really do need right now are wingers. And it's certainly a good pickup of Connolly, like you said, although I'm sure they weren't exactly thinking that he would break his finger on the second day with the team. That was certainly not in their plans, I would imagine.
You could say it's a broken trade.
Boo. Boo on you, yeah, that was awful.
All right, that was a bad pun. I'll try better next time.
All right. You'll try harder next time. But we're gonna move along. We're gonna talk Boston Celtics. Now, we've talked about how this team has has looked different. You know, this team seems to be really making a legitimate push, a real legitimate push for that eighth spot in the Eastern Conference playoffs. So, Xander, who have you seen as some of the emerging players on this Boston Celtics team?
Well, first of all, I just want to say it's not necessarily a push, but it's also a want to win. This team wants to win. Last year at this point, this team just folded up and just gave up and said, all right, better luck next year. But they've got some very good players this year. They've got, granted, two of these players on my list are injured. I have Jared Sollinger and Avery Bradley. Both are very good players. Avery Bradley out for today's game against the Pelicans. Unfortunate. But two other guys I want to look at are Isaiah Thomas and Tyler Zeller. Tyler Zeller's been playing some great center. He's been getting points when the Celtics need him to, with 8.8 points per game on average. 17 points high in the last five games. Isaiah Thomas, well, you can't say a bad thing about this guy. 19.8 points per game on average in the last five games, 28 points high. I mean, on fire. Oh, my God. And the other two guys, they're hurt, so the stats don't exactly really matter right now. But so Tyler Zeller and Isaiah Thomas are two guys that just almost came out of nowhere this year.
I absolutely agree with you. I think one name you're missing from that list there of emerging players is Jay Crowder. I mean, when the list of players that were acquired in the Rondo trade were listed off, you know, you heard Jameer Nelson, you heard Brendan Wright. I don't think anyone was really paying attention to Jay Crowder. And all of a sudden, you know, Nelson's gone, Wright is gone, and now Crowder is, he's just sort of been kind of an X factor. You know, every once in a while, he just puts up this incredible performance, you know, putting up points, grabbing rebounds. He's just sort of, again, like I said, sort of an X factor player, and he's fun to watch in that sense.
He's also easily one of the most underrated players on this team because, like you said, no one really mentions him out of that Rondo trade. But
exactly,
like you said, he's on fire.
Yep, but with Isaiah Thomas, you really hit the nail on the head. He's just come in and been absolute spark plug for this team. I mean, you know, outside of maybe Evan Turner, he's the first real distributor this team has had since the loss of Rajon Rondo. Marcus Smart is getting a lot better, but his real talent seems to lie on the defensive side, where he
Marcus Smart a little bit of time to develop into the offensive player that he was touted as being coming out of the draft, but still, like you said, he's had a good year too. I'm not going to deny that.
Yeah, Marcus Smart has developed in all aspects. He's become a really good all around player. But you know, as a distributor, you know, Isaiah Thomas, when you watch him play, he really does remind you a bit of more of a Rondo-esque kind of guy. Although the one difference I would make between him and Rondo, he's more willing to shoot the ball. You know, when he drives, he's more likely to go for that layup as opposed to making the pass to the outside. Although in terms of having that pass to the outside, I will say one player you did mention, Avery Bradley. I think having that distributor has made him explode as a bona fide shooter, which, of course, makes it hurt that much more that he suffered that left elbow strain, which, as you said, leaves him out for tonight's game against the Pelicans, makes him questionable for Sunday's game against the Magic. We don't yet know how long he's going to be out, but losing that veteran presence of Bradley on top of already having lost Sollinger certainly hurts for the Celtics.
Well, I mean, going off on that, I'm not really going to say that I don't think he's going to be out for very long. I mean, it's an elbow strain. If it was an elbow sprain or an elbow break, then I'd say he'd definitely be out for a lot longer. But he came out in the last game right after hurting his elbow and played the fourth quarter. And then they realized that he was more hurt than he was, but I think he just needs some time to just rest the elbow. He should be back within two, maybe at most five games.
Yeah. I mean, if he's already questionable for Sunday's game, then certainly he'll probably be back. But we're going to head to a commercial break for he is questionable. It's tough. It's tough to lose him, but he'll probably be back soon. So do not fret, Celtics fans. He'll probably be back soon. But we are going to head to a commercial break, but please stick around. We've got a lot of great stuff coming back at you. The Patriots have been making all kinds of noise in the offseason, whether it's picking up guys or not picking up guys. Stick around to find out what we have to say about all that right after this.
Now I'm here. Now I'm here. Now I'm here. now I'm there.
Welcome back to H4TV News. I am Jesse Mayfield Chien, still joined by my colleague, Xander Manning. And it's time to talk some New England Patriots. I don't think we've talked about them in a little while, but they have made some noise this week. It's the off-season for our defending Super Bowl champions, and they've had to make some interesting off-season decisions. Started off by using their franchise tag for kicker Steven Gostkowski. Now, a lot of discussion has been made about, you know, how they made this decision. You know, they tagged Gostkowski. They didn't use the franchise tag on safety Devin McCourty. So my question to you, Xander, what do you think? Did the Patriots make the right move in tagging Gostkowski? Did they make the right move in not tagging McCourty? What are your thoughts on this?
I'm not changing my mind. I think it was a great idea to lock up Gostkowski. And like I said, McCourty's replaceable. McCourty's a secondary player. The secondary's got a lot of depth. I think secondary, you can replace him with someone. It's not necessarily a bad move to dump, not necessarily let McCourty test the free agent waters. And it's a big ocean. And McCourty can test it out, but I would not be surprised if he came crawling back to the Patriots. But the thing I want to look at with tagging Gostkowski is they didn't do it with Adam Vinatieri. They let Adam Vinatieri go, and Adam Vinatieri left. Vinatieri was a valuable weapon. Steven Gostkowski is a valuable weapon, and I think it's a great move that they franchise tagged him.
You see, me, I don't agree with you on this one, Xander. I just don't. I mean,
go ahead, disagree.
I disagree because, personally, I just don't see the value in a strong kicker. I just don't see it as being that valuable. I see kicker as being more replaceable than strong secondary. And I'll tell you why. I looked into the numbers on this, and, you know, Steven Gostkowski had a fantastic season as a field goal kicker last year. I'm not going to dispute that because I'd be an idiot to do so. He attempted and made more field goals than anyone in the NFL last year. He made 35 out of 37, which is outstanding. Now, let's say the Patriots dumped him this offseason and picked up a new kicker who was the equivalent of the worst kicker in the NFL, which for last year would be the equivalent of Blair Walsh of the Minnesota Vikings. He made about 73% of his kicks, which is abysmal for an NFL kicker. Now, 73% of 37 attempted field goals would be about 27 made field goals. So that's a difference of 8 field goals from Gostkowski's numbers. So that's a difference of 24 points, or a point and a half per game. So that's a difference of half a field goal per game, you know, is the difference between the best, one of the best kickers in the league and the worst kicker in the league. And if the Patriots, you know, lost from their average scoring last season a point and a half per game, they would drop from fourth best scoring team in the league to about sixth. So the fact is, it's not going to have that big an impact if you even went from the best kicker in the league to the worst, let alone if you went from the best to someone who's just average. So I just don't see, you know, I see kicker as a far more replaceable position than someone in the secondary. I think the mindset that, you know, you know, that anyone in the secondary is replaceable is what led to that huge gap in Super Bowl championships that the Patriots had. You know, they thought Leonard Malloy was replaceable. They thought Ty Law was replaceable. They thought Asante Samuel was replaceable. Well, guess what? They really weren't. You know, I mean, Leonard Malloy, they were able to go out and get Rodney Harrison, and that was great. But when they lost Ty Law, they didn't win another Super Bowl until they finally went out and picked up Darrelle Revis. You know, so if they start going on that pattern again, I mean, I just don't like it. Especially, I mean, they can't afford another 10-year gap in Super Bowls, given, you know, I hate to say it, given the ticking clock on Brady's career. You know, I don't like it.
I'm going to respect your opinion, but I'm not going to agree with it. I'm going to stand by my statement. I mean, I will admit that that all is very true. I respect it. I get it. But still, I think you need to have a solid kicker. I mean, I brought this up to you earlier in the week.
But why?
You need to make those extra points. You need to make those long field goals to win
every
the game or send the game
to
overtime.
The max that I get it on the college football level, but the max that any NFL kicker missed of extra points last year was one. So that doesn't make any sense. But
the other thing I like about Kostowski is not just that he makes the field goals, it's that he makes the long ones when he needs to. Like, he has a range. He hits 53-yard field goals. I mean, of course, there's Sebastian Janikowski out of Oakland making 63-yarders. Then there's Matt Prater on steroids making field goals for Denver from, like, 65 yards. But you need a guy who can hit those long field goals, like 53, 55, maybe sometimes even 56. You need
but
a guy
do
who can
you?
Hit those long field I think you do, because you need to win those games. Sometimes you need to win games with field goals. Or you need to tie
but
the
when,
game up.
When
with
do you? I looked at the Patriots' schedule last season. They did win a few games on field goals, but on all those games that were won by that they needed field goals to win, no field goal was attempted that was 40 yards or more. So, no, they didn't need a kicker who was that good last season. They didn't need Stephen Gostkowski to win the Super Bowl.
I'm not saying last year. Last year was just a great offense, a great defensive year. I'm saying in the future.
And that's what you need. You
need
a great offense. You need a great defense. You don't need a great kicker. That's what my point is.
All right. We'll agree to disagree on this one.
That's fair. But we're going to move along to another interesting offseason decision the Patriots have made, and that is that the team has chosen not to pick up the option on the contract of Vince Wilfork. Now, this is a guy who has been, you know, the face of the Patriots defense for years now. And so it seemed like last year maybe he'd be going, but they at the last minute managed to pick up his contract, and now once again, they're not picking up his option, and this time it seems like his days on the Patriots are numbered. Xander, what's your reaction to this? I mean, this is quite the end of an era if Wilfork is gone.
I may have said bad things about the defense, but I was talking about the secondary there. I think this is a horrible move by Robert Kraft, absolutely horrible move, because you need a good defensive line, no question in my mind. And Wilfork has carried that defensive line for years now. And he's not just a franchise player for the Patriots. He's a franchise star. He breaks through offensive lines, sacks quarterbacks. You need that big man up in front. And once you have a bunch of faith in Chandler Jones and those guys, or if you're going to go back and get someone like Isaac Sapawaga again, then I don't see why they're doing this. I think it's absolutely ridiculous.
It certainly is a questionable move, but I mean, Wilfork has been in the league a long time. We're certainly seeing the effect of injuries and age on his playing. I mean, you know, emotionally, it's a hard move to swallow. I, you know, definitely agree this is hard to swallow. I wouldn't necessarily call it a bad move. I know this may seem contradictory to what I was saying with the last point, but honestly, I mean, it's not like the Patriots' run defense was consistently amazing last year, and it's not like their pass rush was anything amazing. I don't think, you know, Wilfork was exactly, you know, carrying a great defensive line, you know.
He was also a leader on this team is what I want to say, too. He he was a leader on the team. He showed guys who were up and coming, like Chandler Jones. He mentored Chandler Jones. He mentored Jamie Collins. And he helped Akiem Ayers come into his prime because he broke up the offensive line, helped Akiem Ayers get in, sack the quarterback. He has helped this team so much in so many years. I don't see why they don't pick up his option. Was his option?
Well, maybe
like
$30 million
for 1 year.
Have,
that's a different story.
Maybe they just don't. Maybe he just doesn't have it left in him to lead this team. I mean, there's certainly plenty that he's owed by this team, but the fact is, it's a business. You know, you don't pick up a guy just because of all that he has done. You pick up a guy for what you think he will do. And for Vince Wilfork, there certainly are a lot of question marks. And there's a lot of guys that they might feel more confidence in. I mean, Dominic Easley, was injured, but he showed potential. Silver Salinga, you know, had flashes of potential last season. So they might be looking at other defensive tackles.
That's a good point. I'll let you win this one.
All right, but sticking with football, we're gonna stick with football, and we're gonna talk about the rest of the AFC East because, my gosh, has it been a week for the AFC East? The Buffalo Bills making all kinds of moves, picking up LeSean McCoy from the Eagles, picking up Matt Castle from the Vikings. Now, just today, we hear the New York Jets trading for Brandon Marshall from the Chicago Bears. So with all of this happening throughout the AFC East, my question to you, Xander, should the Patriots be worried?
I wouldn't necessarily go as far as worried, but maybe concerned, maybe just wary of everything everyone else is doing. Maybe you'll be a little bit worried about the Bills picking up McCoy because McCoy's a very dangerous running back. He could easily help the Bills run away with that title. They could come in second, come in first place for the first time in years. I'd be wary of that. I wouldn't necessarily be worried unless they're unable to pick up Terrell Revis. Then I would say, yes, worry all you want, Robert Kraft. You may be screwed. But as long as they focus on trying to pick up Revis or pick up another cornerback or some way to combat with these offenses, I wouldn't be too worried.
Yeah. See, I'd say worry more when the Bills get a better quarterback than Matt Castle.
Exactly.
Because, I mean, the Bills, they've had eras of great running teams. I mean, when they had Fred Jackson and C.J. Spiller in their primes, they were one of the most dangerous running teams in all of football, and they still couldn't get anywhere in the AFC East. So until they get a better passing game, I mean, Sammy Watkins is incredible as a wide receiver, but they need a quarterback, which they don't have right now.
No,
they don't really. Yeah. So until they get
one,
I'm not buying the Bills yet. And the same thing with the Jets, you know. Yeah. And the same thing with the Jets. You know, Geno Smith showed flashes of potential. I'm not ready to buy him yet. And their defense has a lot of holes. So, yes, they picked up another good receiver. You know, Eric Decker and Brandon Marshall, that's a scary combination. But I'm also not ready to buy the Jets just yet. So I don't think the Patriots have lost their stranglehold on this division. I think, you know, they're ears probably should perk up at this noise, be like, huh, so there are other teams in this division. That's interesting.
Like I said, be wary of it, but not worried.
Basically. So basically, I'm agreeing with you on this, you know, in this sense. It's something to be wary of, but not worried. Not quite ready to replace the A with an O in this sense yet, as you might say. For these last 5 minutes of our show here, we're going to move over to baseball because spring training is here, folks. We're ready to, you know, start talking some baseball. The Boston Red Sox, they've started up spring training. You know, obviously, you know, not too much has happened. I mean, Ruiznes Castillo suffered an oblique strain, which is obviously tough for him. On a brighter spot, Dustin Pedroia had quite the game against the Twins in a spring training game. He had a grand slam and fell just a triple shy of the cycle. So a good sign for him to maybe turn things around after some declining seasons the past couple of years. But,
leadoff hitter candidate right there?
What?
Leadoff hitter candidate, Pedroia maybe?
Pedroia? Interesting thought. I never considered that, but who knows? That could be a dangerous thought. But for now, Xander, my question to you is who are the players to watch out for in spring training? I mean, it's pretty obvious with some things. Like, obviously, Pedroia is going to be the second baseman. Obviously, Sandoval's the third baseman. Obviously, Vasquez is, you know, obviously, Napoli is the first baseman. Obviously, Vasquez is going to be the catcher. You know, who are some people to watch out for in spring training?
He surprises me every spring, but I'm going to say him again, Henry Owens. I think he's going to make a compelling argument for why Justin Masterson should actually move to the bullpen and why Henry Owens should be the number five or six starter in this rotation. And
really,
I think he's going to. He's got a lot of potential. He's the number, 18 prospect in all of baseball right now. He's got a lot of potential there. I think he's going to show up and really impress John Farrell, really impress the front office this spring training. And another guy I'm looking out for is Mitchell Boggs. Everyone forgets that the Red Sox signed Mitchell Boggs from the Cardinals to a one-year minor league deal this offseason. But I think he's going to make a very good anchor at the back of this bullpen this year with Tozawa, Tommy Lane, and Koji. I think he's got a shot to set up. He's got a lot of potential. He used to be the setup man to Jason Mott out in St. Louis, and he was very good out in St. Louis. He's a very shutdown pitcher, and that's what the Red Sox need in their bullpen right now. And I would not be surprised if he made a huge impression during spring training and made the roster and anchored the back of that bullpen.
Well, you're right about one thing. I did completely forget that the Red Sox made that deal. So you're right that I think a lot of people did forget about it. I certainly forgot about it. But in terms of Henry Owens, that is quite the interesting prediction because, I mean, Henry Owens, he's only had six games in AAA, and his ERA in AAA is about four right now. So it's a gutsy call. You know, I am not disputing Owens' talent because he has got a wealth of talent as a pitcher. I would only dispute the timing because I think that he needs a little more time in AAA before he's ready to call up to the majors. I do think he'll impress in spring training as a young guy with a lot of potential. But I don't think they'll be calling him. Who knows? If he impresses well in spring training, we may see him, you know, sometime around the midway mark, somewhere close to the midway
mark. I'm not saying they're going to bring him up. I'm just saying that he's going to create a great impression. He's going to be a sleeper in spring training. I'm not saying they're going to bring him up. Of course, he needs a lot more time in AAA before they bring him up.
Okay.
I completely agree with that.
I think he's going to create a compelling argument. Okay, so you're saying, you're saying look out for Owens in, like, May or June or something like that. Look out for maybe him being called up.
Late April, maybe, at the earliest. But June at the latest.
Okay. All right, well, you heard it, folks. Xander Manning is saying this year could be Henry Owens' Major League debut, so hold on to your Red Sox tickets. Why you wouldn't, I'm honestly not quite sure. Fenway Park is awesome. But, you know, here's a new reason for you to hold on to those tickets, because Henry Owens will be debuting for the Red Sox, according to our analyst, Xander Manning. But that is going to do it for us here at H4TV News. For Xander Manning, I am Jesse Mayfield Sheehan. Be sure to check us out next week. I'm sure there will be plenty more to talk about in the world of Boston sports. And other than that, I would just like to say, have a great week, everybody. Thanks for listening.